Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Okay, so on the Parishishtam appendix on 39 or 40, Vinodikam 251, or items of special interest. Jiva Goswami Satsandarbhas. Srila Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 44, cites two verses from Chapter 5, Canto 3 that confirm the two methods of yoga Srila Sukadeva Goswami speaks of in the opening chapters of Canto 2. Moreover, these verses from Canto 3 make clear that only one of the two methods is unreservedly supported by the Srimad Bhagavatam, i.e., Bhakti Yoga. Sukadeva Goswami personally recommends bhakti to Maharaj Prickett. Consult Srila Prabhupada's purports to verses 12 through 14. 1. The born and unborn demigods prayed, Srimad Bhagavatam 3, 5, 46, 47. O Lord, persons who because of their serious attitude attained the stage of enlightened devotional service achieved the Vairagya Sharam, essence of Vairagya, complete meaning of renunciation and knowledge, and Anjasa, quickly attain the Vaikuntha in the spiritual sky by drinking the nectar of your topics. Others who are pacified by means of transcendental self-realization and have conquered over the modes of nature by dint of strong power and knowledge also enter into you, but for them there is much pain, whereas the devotee simply discharges devotional service, sevya, serving you, and thus feels no pain. So you see here what difference is this serious attitude, then through that, because it's directed at the Lord, then the complete meaning of renunciation, knowledge, comes to them. Right? While the other one, they have to endeavor for it. Does this make sense? The yogis, they have to use their energy and vary it with, here, dint of strong power and knowledge. So there's much trouble like that. But for the devotee, actually, because of the sincerity, when he pleases Krishna, it's not actually trouble. Right? Of course, one could always say it is trouble like that, but it depends how you define it. Let us say you have to cook for somebody, a situation, a program. You don't really like the program or like the people involved. So, is it a trouble? Yeah. Let us say you're cooking for someone, you really like them, you're really happy they're coming over. In fact, you even wanted them to come over and you're cooking for them. Is it a trouble? No. Okay, of the two, now take of these two, of the two, which one are you actually going to work harder for? Huh? The second one. So that means you're actually going through more so-called trouble, but it's not any trouble. And the other one, you're going through actually less trouble, but it's considered more trouble. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is if it's connected to a person that there's affection for, there's no trouble. So that's the point in devotional service. Not that there'll be no trouble. That's what the impersonalists and Buddhists are hoping for, but it doesn't exist, right? Material world means trouble. You deal with it, it's trouble. But what is meaning is that because of that relationship with the devotees and with the Lord, it's not actually trouble. Does that make sense? 3. Sridhar Swami comments. The word Ankuta Dishnyam 3546 means Vaikuntha Loka. Visadasya, verse 46, means abandoning all duplicity and accepting devotional service as the only goal of life. In the second of these verses, the inferiority of both means an end of they who are attached to the path of philosophical speculation, jnana, is described. The word apare, others, here means they who desire liberation. For them there is much labor and trouble, shrama. However, for they who accept the service of the Lord as the only goal of their lives, there is no great labor and trouble. They always experience great bliss as a result of their devotional service, and they also attain liberation as a byproduct of that service. This verse was spoken by the born and unborn demigods to the Supreme Creator. Okay. Banning all duplicity. Meaning, duplicity here means you can take it in the external, in that if we're very much absorbed in politics and other such things like this,
then we could take that as the meaning of, as duplicity, abandoning this kind of behavior. But also, abandoning all duplicity means that we see anything separate from Krishna. Right? We see Krishna, we see Maya. Now, when we see everything in connection with Krishna, there is no duplicity. Does that make sense? So, the one is more trouble. Where it's like, okay, here's Maya and here's Krishna and I'm just going for Krishna and, you know, like this. But the one where you see is that it's Krishna and whatever I'm doing in connection with Krishna, I don't see the duplicity in that. Then the Maya side of it just kind of disappears. Right? It's not so important. Does that make sense? Right? It's like you're out with some good friends, you're having a really good time, and it starts to rain. You just laugh. You know? If you're close by shelter, you just run into the shelter and, you know, you just go on having a good time. Or if you're right out in the middle of the field, then you'll have fun getting completely soaking wet. Right? But if you were in a bad mood and it started to rain, then you'd just be grumbling. Right? Does that make sense? So this is a... Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 2 and 3 elaborate on a kind of bhakti, single-pointed devotional service. By first citing verse 6 of chapter 2, canto 2, consult Srila Prabhupada's purports to verse 6 and 7, Anucheda 2. It means these parishistams, the appendixes, are for when you're doing your study, so that you can see the depth of what is there. Does that make sense? Like that. In other words, Prabhupada, he has already studied all these, so he's written all this into the purports. But because of the way he speaks and the language he uses, we tend to consider it quite simple. Like that. Many times devotees will think, okay, here's the, you know, basic kind of stuff that's been given by Prabhupada, but the real, you know, solid substance we find in the works of the acharyas, you know, or somewhere else. Does that make sense? I've heard it before. But, you know, so... But what's being pointed out is, no, the most deepest conclusions are already written in, but Prabhupada does it so simply. Like that. He can say it in language that we can understand. Because we can understand it, we think it's easy. Right? I think I mentioned this before. I went to visit one man, and he had the books of one Indian, famous Indian yogi. And I asked, what does he say? And he says, he doesn't know. He says, the wording that he uses is so fancy and, how do you say, ornamental and subtle and vague, that it sounds very nice and it makes no sense. So they figure this guy really must be saying something so high grade that I can't even catch it. You know? Like that. And so therefore they're completely awed by him. And they have all this, you know, this many books of the guy that they read regularly. They can't understand a word. It doesn't have any benefit, but they just think this guy must be great. So that's the thing, is Prabhupada wasn't writing just for that small class of people that are illusioned by that. He was writing for everybody. Right? And the point is you should be able to apply it. The theory's not enough. Right? It means, one, we have to have a correct understanding of the theory, and two, we have to properly apply the theory. Right? If we have a misunderstanding of the theory, then when we apply it, we get a bad result. Don't blame the theory. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is that we have to understand the theory, but we should be able to apply it. And even if we're not so clear on the theory, if we're able to apply it in devotional service and actually get the devotional result, then that's fine, because knowledge and renunciation will come just by doing that. You understand? You can separately endeavor for knowledge and renunciation, like the jnanis and yogis. Or you can endeavor to absorb yourself in devotional service. That will automatically give these two. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the point. It doesn't mean we don't make any endeavor. It just means... Does that make sense? You know, like that. Okay. Anucheda 2. Anucheda means basically there... I'm not sure the Sanskrit of what Anucheda means, but it basically means a particular philosophical point that he wants to make. And then there'll be a group of verses around that. We don't have the sutras like that. You'll have a chapter, and in the chapter, well, not a chapter, you have a pada, which is like a sub-chapter. Then in that pada, there'll be so many verses, and in that there'll be so many anuchedas, right? The points that are being made by that chapter.
So you could study it either by, you could look at it by, and then those chapters, there's four of those sub-chapters in one chapter, there's four chapters. Or you could say four sections with four chapters each, however you want to. So you have 16 divisions like that. Those can also be divided. First two sections would be the Sambandha, the third Abhideya, the fourth one Prayojana. So there's many ways you can break depending on what you want to do. But Anuchedas is very common. You want to make a specific point, then you bring in the verses and the commentary that brings out that point. And then there's a logical sequence of those Anuchedas. Like when we get to the Bhakti Shastri, then we'll be studying Srila Prabhupada's analysis of Bhagavad Gita. He wrote himself. So in that also, like Vedanta Sutra, there's four sections, and in those sections there's so many subsections, and basically all those divisions that are there, all the Anuchedas that he's making. You know, something like Krishna is God, you know, we're not this body, you know, the material energy is temporary. These are all major points that you have to know. Does that make sense, how this is working? Okay. So here is that the previous one is that he's pointing out the difference between bhakti and the other paths of liberation. How bhakti is superior and Bhagavatam only supports that actually. Now he's pointing out within devotional service, then like that we want to be focused, like ekayana. Right? So he's bringing that. So you see we natural sequences here? Right? First you prove that bhakti means... You can get out in this material world by two processes, devotion and the path of renunciation, right? Of those two, actually only bhakti really works, and it's recommended because it works easily and efficiently. The other one's very slow and not necessarily guaranteed. And once you get out, you'll come back anyway. So you spent more time, more energy, and you get a temporary result. The other one, you spend less time, less energy, you get a permanent result. Right, so any idiot could add it up and come up with the right answer. Bhakti. Problem is the jnanis are so intelligent they can't get this answer like that because it's just too simple for them, right? Just too simple, so they don't like it. Like I mentioned once, I was discussing with one academic. I think he was postgraduate in mathematics. I don't remember if he was doing MA, PhD, but whatever. Math was his thing, so we were discussing the Vedic math, and I was describing how the Vedic math is done in such a way everything's just addition, like that. And it's kind of like he reluctantly kind of said, yeah, I know, all math is addition, but he didn't like that. He likes that it's very complex formulas and all these different things that his intellectual brain could then, you know, chew on and digest, that it's just... you know, addition, not even just arithmetic, but just addition, then that pained him. Does that make sense? So the impersonalists, they don't like that it's just so simple. You just show some affection and devotion towards God and you get out of here. They can't handle that because their thing is all my affection and devotion to anything that I've ever done has only ended up in pain. So therefore, spiritual must be the opposite. Therefore, there must be no emotion involved. Does that make sense? That's their logic. Because then it's purely intellectual. But we use the intellect to keep ourselves from getting absorbed in material, mundane emotion. But it's so it's superior to the mundane mind. Does that make sense? But the intelligence is subservient to the spiritual mind. Does that make that sense? Because we want attachment, but to Krishna, not to Maya. Does that make sense? All right. So when we're attracted by Maya, then intelligence is the superior of the two. But when you're attracted by Krishna, it's the junior. Does that make sense? Okay. Anuchedita. Furthermore, Srimad Bhagavatam 226 explains. Thus being fixed, one must render service under the Supersoul situated in one's own heart by his omnipotency. Because he is the almighty personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited, he is the ultimate goal of life.
And by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. 2. Sridhar Swami comments, what then should be done? Lord Hari should be served, here with the word evam, thus, meaning being renounced. In that way one should serve the Lord, tam bhajeta. The reasons why he should be worshipped follow. 1. He is situated in one's heart by his omnipotency. Swachite swata eva siddha. 2. He is the supersoul, atma. 3. He is very dear, priya. 4. Devotional service to him, the dear one, is full of happiness. 5. He is the ultimate reality, artha. 6. He is not false, while that which is absence of atma is unreal. 7. He is the word. No, he is the Lord, whose transcendental qualities are worshipable, Bhagavan. And 8. He is eternal, ananta. Because he is like this, one should worship him, tam bhajeta. Niyartha means the ultimate goal of life. Because by seeing him, one becomes full of bliss. He is called nirvrita, bliss. As a result of performing devotional service, his blissful form is revealed. Furthermore, when yatra, there is devotional service, then the ignorance that is the cause of conditioned state of existence, samsara heto, is destroyed. Uparama, from the word cha, here means the attainment should be understood. So here he's giving these ones as that he's the one in everything and everything, so that means everything's happening because of him. So that means naturally then that's where our affection should lie. In other words, it's natural, out of gratefulness we're going to have affection for someone who's benefiting us. Right? So then that means then this, then if he's the one that's entered into everything, that means anything we're getting benefit from comes actually from him. So that means naturally then that gratefulness or that affection should be towards him, right? So then he is in everyone's heart. He is the super soul, right? It's not just a force. It's not just an energy. There is a person there. Then he is very dear, and then devotional service naturally to him is full of happiness. Right? You see the progression there? And then, okay, full of happiness. Now one could say, well, this happiness may be illusory happiness, just like in this material world. Right? But no, this happiness is the ultimate reality. What is gained from this devotional service, this is real, not temporary. Does that make sense? It's not of this world. He is not false. Well, that is which is absence of Atma is unreal. It means he is real, but that which is not connected with the soul or the super soul, that is unreal. Right? Now we're pointing out, because one will say, okay, well this is not, okay, material things are unreal, and you're saying he's not real. He is real. And the happiness gained from that service is real. So then, what is then unreal? How do you define unrealness? Unrealness means what is not connected to Atma. Right? Which means it's not connected to the soul, not connected to Krishna, not connected to Brahman. Does that make sense? Right? And then, he is the Lord. Okay, he is real. And so his qualities are worshipable. And he is eternal. And because he is like this, then he should be worshipped. Okay? Do you see that? It means whatever we're dealing with in the material world is not giving us any result. Whatever result we are getting is actually coming for the Lord. That Lord is sitting in our heart as a person. Worship of him is what actually gives happiness. It is real. What is connected to him is real. And all the qualities we're looking for are all in him. That's the reality. And this is not temporary like the material world. It'll be there forever. Therefore, he's the one. Does that make sense? Srila Sukadeva Goswami speaks this verse, Anucheta 3, Nimesha. This Anucheta now takes up the question, what if I take shelter of the Lord in the heart by means of mixed devotional service? 1. The spiritual activities of Jnana Yoga, which begin with hearing and meditation, make one favorable towards the Supreme because they give one direct perception of his Brahman feature. Shankhya Yoga, Astanga Yoga, and Karma Yoga also, each in its own way, instill in the yogi a favorable attitude towards the Supreme. These other yoga systems do not instill to a certain extent some
do instill to a certain extent some devotion to the Lord. Karma and by karma yoga, by obliging the yogi to follow the Lord's orders and make offerings to the Lord. And jnana yoga, by having one, among other things, become detached from everything but the Lord. And although these kinds of yoga are therefore the friends of devotional service, still the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.37 and 2.2.6 urges one should worship the Lord by engaging in devotional service. The devotees therefore do not consider other yoga systems very important. Okay, so here is important keys how they are connected, because this is what we can use. In other words, devotional service is, that's real. Mixed devotional service is not considered good, but if we're conditioned, it's going to be mixed anyway. Does that make sense? Right? If we're contaminated, that means dirt. Right? It's not good that there's any dirt in the heart. If there's dirt, that means it's mixed. But since it's there, then how to utilize it properly? In other words, the process of cleaning the heart also is what reveals the Lord. That's why the example is given of cleaning the mirror of the mind. The mirror, by, you want to see, you can't see. So you can try so many ways, you know, looking this way, that way, putting more light, or, you know, getting special glasses or anything. But you clean the mirror, automatically the mirror comes clean, you can see also. Right? So by removing the karma and jnana, means those mixed elements, if it's done properly, they reveal the Lord also. Does that make sense? Yeah?
So here is being given very nicely. Karma yoga, by obliging the yogi to follow the Lord's orders and make offerings to the Lord. Right? We're going to eat anyway, so we offer it to the Lord. We're going to buy clothes anyway. Do we offer it to the Lord? We're going to use medicine. Is that offered to the Lord? Right? How are we going to do the cooking and eating and dressing and anything we do? There's regulations, so it connects it to the Lord. Right? You're going to take a bath. How are you going to take a bath? Right? The famous, you know, the Western thing is you go to the toilet, then you take a shower, then you shave. Right? But if you shave, you're contaminated. So you're supposed to go to the toilet, then shave, then shower. You understand? So that's the point, is that it's done according to Shastra, so even in your simplest things in life, then come connected to the Lord, because you're doing it in a way that the Lord has designated. So even though it may not be done out of that spontaneous affection for the Lord, in the background there is a desire to develop that affection, so you follow what he likes, right? Right? You want to get someone's attention. You want to establish a relationship. If you know someone who knows them well, what will you ask them? What do they like? What do they do? You know, what topics do they like to discuss? What activities? Right? So then you can talk about that, right? Isn't it? You know, if you find out that they're a greenie, you don't strike up a conversation about multinational, you know, chemical corporations. You know? Does that make sense? So, like that, you know what they like, and you'll keep your discussions and activities and that in line with what they like. Isn't it? Does that make sense?
So, that is the point that we're trying to get to, is that through karma, you're going to do activity anyway. So this activity can be done according to the Lord's direction, and that way you connect it to the Lord, even though you don't have the reason you're doing it's for yourself. Like that, or the reason you're doing it is because it's an activity you like, though the Lord likes it, but you like doing that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It means you take activities that you like to do and you do them for the Lord, so that's fine. Right? You even do activities you like to do for yourself, but you do them according to the regulation given by Krishna. Then it becomes connected. Right? And jnana, by becoming detached from everything but the Lord. Right? Their thing is neti, neti, neti. They become detached from everything, including the Lord. Generally, the Lord's the first one to go. Right? Like that. Like the Shankarite, you know, sannyasi, will go to the temple, will circumambulate it, will offer obeisances from outside, but will not go inside. Right? Because God is not in the deity.
God's everywhere, everything is Brahman, except the deity. Right? So that's why they're called Mayavadis. They're not actual, true impersonalists. Because they take the Lord as Maya. So if he's Maya, that means everything's Maya. So they're actually Mayavadis. That's their philosophy, is that of the philosophy of Maya. But it's based on principles of impersonalism, the actual Brahmavadis. But that means, in other words, know what, Mayavadis are not Brahmavadis. They use some of the technique and everything like that. They discuss like Brahmavadis, but actually they're not Brahmavadis. Otherwise, the deity also would be Brahman. They're Brahman, deity's Brahman. If they can be God, why can't the deity be God? If everybody else can be God, the dog's God, why can't the deity be God? But no, the deity can't be God. So that's what we're saying, is that they become detached from everything, generally starting with the Lord. Like that. Does that make sense? But here, by Gyan, you become detached from everything. In other words, all those things you're attached to, you're engaging them, but now you're also, through that knowledge, now breaking those attachments to it. Does that make sense? So this is key. Now here, this is directly from Jiva Goswami himself. Right? He's given this method. So this is important. So he's pointing out, as therefore, they themselves are a great help to devotional service, but they themselves are not the devotional service. This is very important to note, because otherwise we may become proud of our ability to follow the rules or to understand things, you know, as they are, to analyze. You understand? We become proud of that. I'm able to follow the sadhana nicely. The four regs are going nicely for me. I know, you know, I've studied the Gita and the Shastras. I can point out, sometimes devotees get bewildered and I can say, oh no, this is this, or that's this mode of nature working, or like this, right? So that's good. That's all part, assistance to the devotional service. But the actual devotion is how much we're actually interested to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Because that's what everybody in the spiritual world is trying to do. Yeah? So that's the position we're trying to come to. So we should not become distracted by these others. That's why it says, don't become distracted by the use of the universal form in this jnana process, right? Or even in the karma process. You can use it in both, right? Because universal form is everything, all karma, jnana, yoga. Does that make sense? So it's used as a tool. It's a great assistant, but it is never replaces. So one should not be proud of what one has gained through the processes of karma and jnana and figure that that itself then proves the devotion. Generally it will, right? But we ourselves should not become proud. We use that for others. Oh, they know so much, they're so nicely fixed, so they're advanced, so we respect. Right? But for ourselves, we don't use that. We know it's a matter of no devotion. Lord Chaitanya himself is saying, I have no devotion, right? If I had real love for Krishna, how could I stay in this body when he's not here? Right? So even Lord Chaitanya didn't consider himself up to the proper devotional standard. Right? But by external systems of his activities and his understanding, then we know that that's not true. Does that make sense? Right? So one should always be very careful to not get distracted that these other two, they themselves are the substance of devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? Okay.
Paramatma Sandarbha, Anuchetas 4 and 5, elaborate upon Bhagavatam 2.2.8. Consult Srila Prabhupada's purports of verse 8. The third Purusha avatar is described in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.8.
Third Purusha avatar is? Yeah, so see, it means we're all talking about Kiridakshaya Vishnu. Now he's taking a different angle, meaning as the third Purusha. Right? So the third Purusha then, in that way you're looking at it, means Aniruddha. Okay?
Others conceive of the personality of Godhead residing within the body in the region of the heart and measuring only 8 inches, with 4 hands carrying a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conch shell, and a club, respectively. 2. Here the words pradesha means the distance between the forefinger and the thumb. the Vedanta Sutra, it is said. It's not this one. That's not a Pradesh, huh? So this is a Pradesh. Okay. Okay. In the Vedanta Sutra 1325, it is said, Hridyapekshaya tu manu sadhikaratvam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead indeed appears in the hearts of human beings. Bhagavad Sandarbha Anucheta 44 sees Bhagavatam 2-8 as a lesson in the Lord's all-pervasiveness. See 8th purport. In this verse, Bhishmadeva says, the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is now present before me, Tam Imam. He is present in the hearts of all conditioned souls in the forms of his expansions as the all-pervading Supersoul. Sharira bhajam hridi 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 dishtitam. Yeah. The form of the Lord as the all-pervading Supersoul is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam 2-8. Bhishma concludes, although these forms of the Supersoul appear to be different from the form of the original Personality of Godhead, in truth, they are not at all different from Him, Ekam. Now I can meditate with full concentration on that one Lord, Sri Krishna, Samadhi Gato Smi. I am now aware of the all-pervading, blissful form of the Supreme Lord as the Supersoul. It means He's in the heart, means that's the size, but that doesn't mean that that's all what He's limited to. Right? Does that make sense? Because He is in every atom, between every atom. So He's very small, He's very big. You know, and when He's Kiradaksha Vishnu is sitting in Dhruva Loka on the milk ocean on Ananta, then most likely He would be bigger than this, right? Because Lakshmi is there massaging His feet. You know, she would probably, you know, I don't know how she would do it if He's that big. It would be really delicate. Of course, girls have delicate fingers, but still, it would be a problem. Right.
But it's pointing out that this is, that's why he says, residing and measuring only 8 inches. Others conceive of the Personality of Godhead.
Means that's what they're doing. So He is 8 inches there, but that's not the only, they're conceiving of Him in that form, which is real, but there's also other forms, and He is the Supreme Lord who's standing before Him. He says, the Supersoul is standing before me. It doesn't mean that, you know, they had to prop him up because he's only 8 inches. You know, Bhishma Dev's lying on his back, so therefore Arjuna had to hold him in his hand because he's only 8 inches high. You know, does that make sense? Okay.
Bhishma Dev continues, 3. I have now transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to His presence everywhere. Formerly, I thought the forms of the Supersoul were different from each other and from other forms of the Supreme Lord, for I thought it impossible for the Lord to be all-pervading. Now I am free of that illusion. Viduta, Beda, Moha. The Supreme Lord is certainly present everywhere in His form as the Supersoul.
Because if you see it as different, in other words, if you see Atma as different, that's the mode of passion. Right? Remember, He's a Kshatriya, so that's their mode, is the mode of passion. So then, naturally, if there's going to be any flaw, then it will be in that mode. Right? Does that make sense? So every station of life has its strength and weakness. So they get things done, but they see that difference. So you're seeing is that each Supersoul is different, and the Supersoul is different from other forms of the Lord. So even though you're seeing the Lord, it's still there's a subtle duality there. It's not a mundane duality as such because it's the Lord, but our conception of it is mundane. Right, so therefore it's duality, because there is no difference, right? And that's why a song or one of the acharyas, Govinda Vishram, means, you know, Krishna is resting in your heart, Govinda. So that means that's what they see. So that's why he says others see as the Supersoul.
Yes,
that's
which?
It's from the Jnana Brahmarasa. Okay, Naruto. Does that make sense? So,
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is now we brought it around to the super soul, but now we want to show that super soul is the same. That's why in all these verses, you'll be dealing with a particular aspect of the material creation of Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, Kira Dakshaya Vishnu. But many times in the verses describing them, the definitions overlap because it's actually the same person, just taking up different moods, but it's actually the same. Does that make sense? The man, the high court judge, you could say that mood is very different from his mood at home with his family. But why is he a high court judge? Right? So he can be with his family. Isn't it? Then you have money, you have the, you know what I'm saying? So technically you can't separate them. Right? Because he's a high court judge, can you insult his wife? No. Right? At home, can you insult his job as a high court judge? No. So even though you will say it's different, looks different, dresses different, mood is different, associates are different, but they're not actually different. There's a difference in rasa, but there's actually not a difference in tattva. Does that make sense? So it's the same person. We relate to Krishna in awe and reverence, therefore he manifests like that. Right? Prabhupada mentioned we're worshipping Radha Krishna deities, but we're actually worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. Right? One may say, no, I'm worshipping Radha Krishna. That's okay. But that means you're worshipping out of devotion. Right? Why are you there at Mangalartik? Why are there seven offerings a day? Why do you do the particular things you do in the Artik? Right? Because that's the rules. So, who reciprocates rules? Krishna and Vrindavan? Krishna and Durga. Right? In other words, Vaikuntha, Lord Vishnu, Narayan, he reciprocates that. So because he's God, that's why we're doing it. Oh, if I do this and I'll get in trouble, you know, because he's God, you know, or I feel embarrassed, you know, he's God and I'm such an idiot. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. Therefore, he reciprocates like that. Devotees that see him as have that mood of that devotion, seeing him as Krishna, then it's Krishna. It is Krishna. I mean, standing on the altar here is Radha and Krishna. But they relate to us as Lakshmi Narayan. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing. It's not, is that, everyone see there's no contradiction here? Okay. So, because, yeah. So that's the point of this duality. So we realize that I'm on this platform, so naturally the Lord reciprocates with me this way, but that doesn't mean that it's not the that same person. But I don't falsely then do it otherwise. You know what I'm saying? I don't, in my devotion, then put Krishna in situations where he's not interested, right? Means you're being in Maya, Krishna as Paramatma will sit there and watch, wait. Krishna in Braja doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's like you're at the house and you know, he's with the family and they're all laughing and joking. Suddenly there's a knock on the door and then all these like big barristers walk in the room and say, oh, we have some very important discussions. So does the family just sit around and laugh and joke? No, they all kind of excuse themselves, right? Or it's after the court, then they're in the back room where they all hang out and then suddenly the family walks in and there's some serious problem and this and that, then everybody else leaves. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that, then it's the same, but there's an appropriate situation. Okay? So according to what is your mood, then that the Lord manifests that. But it's the same Lord. Right? Is that okay? No clinkers?
Yeah. Okay. The Lord's all-pervasiveness is described in the following words. Sri Krishna is present in everyone's heart, even in the hearts of the speculative philosophers. Atma kalpitanam.
pratidrisham. He remains within the sight of all living entities, even though they are situated in many different places. He remains within the sight.
That means anybody could see him at any time, if they want. It's just a matter of wanting. Right?
Like that. So he makes no distinction that he's only in the hearts of the nice people.
Right? He's in everyone's heart. Because to him, everyone is his part and parcel. Just some know it and most forget that. But to him, it's the same. Right? Yes.
Question. Is the speculators, they are the loss of everything? Because they said, even in the heart of those guys?
Even in the heart of those guys, basically you could say that. But more low is those who reject. But what he's meaning is that these people means technically they've rejected him. But they haven't technically never done devotional service and rejected devotional service. That's why it's not considered lowest. Their intelligence is stolen by Maya, mm-hmm. like that. So they're not actually really well situated. But it's different from someone who rejects devotional service. They never knew the Lord. They didn't take it seriously. They never took devotional service as a serious thing. They've always been attracted by karma, by gyan and by rag. So that's their focus. Their intellect and their determination, the sadhana, they're going to get themselves out of the material world. So they never took it seriously. So they're just fools. Their intelligence is stolen by Maya, even though it's shown, but they didn't take it up. But to take it up and think this is nice and then to reject it, that's worse. Like that. But, meaning here, these people ignore him, even reject him, but he's still there. So that's the thing. He doesn't go away. That's the point. He doesn't go away. That's why the mercy of the Lord is not is always available. This concept of eternal damnation, it's a purely mundane, self-centered, puffed up concept. Right? Is that everybody has a bad day, everybody can be reformed. Right? Does that make sense? That's the way it works. Is it doesn't matter what situation you're in, one can be reformed. Because that's why material world was created. So you have 8,400,000 mentalities to be reformed from and come to the platform of pure and alloyed devotion. That makes sense, right? So no one is ever completely lost. If someone is determined to be lost, like the example is given, is that if someone's asleep, you can wake them up. Someone pretending to be asleep, you can't wake them up, right? So someone wants to be asleep, yes, then you'll say they're lost, right? I think it was, yeah, that makes sense. Like somebody once mentioned that I was mentioning to Prabhupada, so many disciples have left and gone away. Prabhupada said, no, very few have gone away. Like that. Because even though they were necessarily dynamically practicing Krishna consciousness, it wasn't seen that they had left that idea. They hadn't gone against. They hadn't taken up meat eating. They hadn't rejected Prabhupada. Had rejected Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they're still connected, just maybe on, temporary, hold or something, But that's all. Does that make sense? Yes.
You said that when we worship the deity, because we do it in a specific mood, then it's like, for Narayan and Bhakti, So how is that devotional service?
Because it's their rules. So you're following their rules, and that shows that affection. In other words, you're showing the affection through the rules.
Because they vote the rules. Because they vote the rules. So they do.
Yeah, yeah. It means they say, you do like this. It's like, it's like before you go in to see the queen, then they tell you, when you come in, then, at this point you have to bow and, you have to address her as such. and this and this, and don't stand like this or don't do this. They'll tell you all those things before you go into the court. Right? You follow all those things, and then it's pleasing to the queen. Right? Because it's her rules.
But when you offer, say, prashad, it's like more personal, right?
It's more personal, but still, that it should be offered. Why are you offering it? Because it should be offered, or you just spontaneously thought that this should be offered?
At the beginning, you're doing it.
Yeah, but that's the point. That's what we're making the distinction between. Is in the beginning, it's the rules, but after a while, it's that you want to do it. So that's spontaneous. When you want to cook something for Krishna, then you're doing it. That's because you're cooking in that, you know.
Does the mood of the deity change as well?
Of course. It's not that the mood of the deity changes, because he is mood.
Yeah.
It's what you draw. It's just like you have a color spectrum. So all the colors are there. So do we say that, and depending upon our view of it, we see a particular color or not? So do we say that the spectrum itself changed, or our view of it changed? Right? So that's the... Okay?
Yeah. I have one question. Did you come to be one criminal and be
between the criminal and?
No, you can to be one criminal.
You can to be one criminal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Krishna is the same in you, sir?
Yeah, same Krishna.
And how is possible that Yamadutas come and protect you?
Krishna goes along with you.
Okay.
When the Yamadutas come and take the non-devotee, Krishna in the heart goes along with them. So when they go to hell, he also goes with them. But because he's not attached to the body, therefore the problems of hell don't bother him. Okay. Now the body's in one piece. Now the Yamadutas have thrown us out into space and we're flying through the air. Now we hit the sharpened rocks on the bottom of the cliff and now our body's in 100 pieces. You know, so it's just kind of like, you know, oh, here come the Yamadutas again, and they're putting us back together and dragging us up the mountain again. Great, we get to do this 1,000 times. You know, but it doesn't matter to him. You know what I'm saying? But the living entity does, because he thinks he is that body. So, you know, that's the problem.
What happened in the case of Dhruva Maharaj when he was in the meditation on the Super Soul? And suddenly the Super Soul disappeared. And when he opened his eyes, he saw the Lord in his front. So what happened then? Why did the Super Soul disappear and now the Lord...
Super Soul means is Krishna is always with you. So he's either outside or he's inside. Right? There's no Super Soul in Vaikuntha, because the Lord's in front of you. Right? But because we forget him, then he goes in the heart. Right? You can't see much in the heart, can you? You know? So it's not obvious. He's always walking around with us. After a while, it's kind of like, who's this guy? You know, it's like, you know, this the ultimate third wheel, right? You know, he can be there anytime, anywhere, with everybody. You can't get more of a, you know what I'm saying? So he sits in the heart, so it doesn't bother you. Right? You can be off doing whatever you think you're doing, and you're not bothered because you think no one's watching. But he sits there. Also, if he disappears from his vision in the heart, naturally, because you're seeing, then you wonder what happens. So you open your eyes, and there he is. Otherwise, then he's got to say something or give you a shake or, you know, like that. So it's, you know, subtleties are a nice part of relationships. Yes?
You meet like a gross body to experience, you know, physical pains and pleasures.
You need a gross body to experience physical planes of pleasures. They put a special body over it. It's not gross, but it covers the subtle body. Otherwise, you couldn't handle it. It's a special body they put you in. They just cover the subtle body, because that's what you are, with that body. And then you can handle, you know, being, you know, cut into pieces or boiled in oil, or, you know, there on your nice, how do you say, hot girlfriend, you know, made out of red hot iron, you know, it's kind of like, I guess that's where the term comes from, right? You know, she's hot. Okay, yeah, so, you know, so then, you know, or, you know, putting, you know, sewing, you know, this way and that way through you and then moving the threads, you know, and stuff. They have lots of nice tricks, you know. So that wouldn't be able to be tolerated. If you were in this body, you'd die. So that's the problem. And then you have to go through making it all again and that, and then you have to wait, you know, wait till the guy grows up and everyone sits around fiddling their fingers and all that until he gets big enough that you can throw him off the mountain again or something, you know. You know what I'm saying? You know, if he's just born, you throw, he doesn't know what's going on. You know, he can't tell what's up or down. So be no use, he has to be at least old enough to figure out what heights are and he's falling off. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Little kids walk off, you put them on a table and they walk off the end of it. They haven't quite figured out heights yet, you know. So it would be really slow, right? So they give you a body that can handle all that and can be ripped apart and they can just put it back together and life goes on, you know. That's the problem. Right? You would want it to end, but it doesn't, you know. Like, how long would you last in boiling oil, right? Not long, you know. Less than a second, right? But here they can sit there and roast you all day, you know, like that, you know, like that. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a special body.
Oh. Bhishma continued, now I can meditate with full concentration. Oh, do we just read this one?
No.
Okay. Now I can meditate with full concentration, samadhi gatosmi, upon the one Lord, Sri Krishna. Well, one Lord, Sri Krishna. Oh, it is. Now before me, Tam Imam, whom I have described in the previous prayers.
Right? Remember, he was describing Krishna with the gopis. Right? Everybody likes Krishna with the gopis, even in Vaikuntha. But they think it's Vishnu who's doing those pastimes. You understand? Because they see Kiradakshaya Vishnu. So he is the Leela avatar. So he comes as all of them. So he also comes as Krishna. But he's Vishnu. He's so great. He's God. And he has these far out pastimes in Braj.
The Supreme Lord is present in the hearts of all conditioned souls. Sharir Bhajam Haridi Haridi. Although the Lord is generally all-pervading in His four-armed super-soul form, I now see Him everywhere in His two-armed form as Sri Krishna, which is supremely powerful and is now present before me. No other form is equal to the form of Sri Krishna.
So he sees the superior form of this because of the sweetness, right? Arjuna, when he's seeing the universal form, he actually gets scared, right? So could you imagine that much would go on in Vaikuntha if everybody was in such great awe and reverence, right? Could anyone go and put a garland on God or sing for God or do anything if they were in that much reverence? Yes? No? No. That's why Yoga Maya, even in Vaikuntha, has to cover with some of the Lord's, you know, sweetness. That makes sense? But it's just enough. You know, so the awe and reverence stays main, but still that element, he's a person that's approachable, is there. Because if you increase the honor reverence too great much, there's no question you can even interact with God. You'd be just so awed, you can't do anything. Right? So the awe has to be reduced to that point that you can actually function. Does that make sense? Right? Dhruva Maharaj, he saw the Lord in front of him. He couldn't say anything. He didn't know what to say. So then the Lord touched him with his conch shell. And by the grace of the conch shell, then he was able to say something. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise it's just too great. You don't know what to do. Right? You have that, what is this? That devotee, Krishna went to his house and he was so excited that he was peeling bananas.
Vidura's wife.
Oh, wasn't there that Brahmin? Huh? Bahulaswa? Not Bahulaswa. Krishna at one point went off and visited this king and this Brahmin. He went out of his way and went to these two people. Yes, isn't Sutadeva did it? I think Vidura did it also. But I think in the Krishna book it's mentioned there that Sutadeva? Sutadeva? Sutadeva, he did that. is that he was, I mean, maybe mistaken, but whatever, is that he was peeling the bananas, throwing away the banana and offering Krishna the banana peel, and Krishna is happily eating it, because his devotion, Krishna eats anyway. Right? So that doesn't mean now we can go out and offer banana peels and stuff like that. It means that if that devotion, Krishna doesn't, it doesn't matter. Right? That makes sense. How do we get into that? That was making some other point. Oh, about the reverence is so great, or the excitement is so great, then one starts doing funny things. So this is something funny that's amusing, so it's actually nice. You know? Like that. Because of that attraction, attachment, then they do funny things. So it's pleasant, but if it goes to the point where there's nothing being done, it's just, you just freeze, then what's the use? What's the meaning? You know, nobody likes that. You know what I'm saying? You know, let's say you have some extremely well-known personality, and suddenly they're stuck in a room with some just ordinary person who happens to know who they are, like that. Then, you know, like in an ATM. And so then, what, you wouldn't like it that the person who's the celebrity wouldn't like it the other person can't interact with them. Does that make sense? You would like them to relax enough that they could talk and that, because they're going to be there for some time. Just stop. Does that make sense? So it's preferred. But one doesn't cross the boundary. That's also intelligence. There's no how to maintain the proper etiquette even in informal situations. Like that. It's a very important thing. Prabhupada used to change servants every 3 months because of this. Because either they can't function or they become familiar. So he mentioned to, you know, other sannyasis, if you keep servants, you know, general thing is if you change them every 3 months, then everybody will be fine. You know? So that's why it was special that you see someone like Hari Sori, he was for 1.5 years with Prabhupada. Because generally it doesn't happen like that. You know, there were only very few devotees who were actually with Prabhupada very often or a long time. Because generally they had to be changed. Because otherwise they become too freaked out or just become too familiar and don't maintain the etiquette. That makes sense? Right. So he's pointing out that Krishna is the supreme form, is the best of all forms. I guess, yeah, no, that's it. Okay, so we'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Jainitai Gaurupayamani.